With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to worship at the altar of music and comedy. The giddiness and the harmony of a well-crafted comedy song brings great joy in abundance. Join the tinkling talents of David Timms and me, Phil Nicol. Sit back, turn it up, and enjoy Songs in the Key of Laugh.
It's Songs in the Key of Laugh. It's Series 3. It's Episode 1. I'm with David Timms.
And Phil Nicol.
And we're so excited to be back for this series, guys. Thank you so much to all of our regular listeners that have made it possible, or make us want to make it possible, to be here for you guys. We had so much fun doing the last two series.
We've had an immeasurable amount of fun. We've had such amazing guests that have really made it all worthwhile. And when you guys send us in your emails, it makes us feel all warm and fuzzy as well. So thank you for
those. Tell us what you want. Also, thank you to any new listeners that are going to join us for this series. We've got some fantastic interviews with great artists coming up. We've got some really fun stuff that Dave and I are working on. But you'll also notice a few things have changed this series as we're doing in-person interviews, which makes it a lot more interesting, doesn't it?
It does, yeah. So we've been doing those interviews at your flat.
Yeah, Casa del Phil.
Yeah, Casa del Phil. And we're recording the wraparounds. Yeah. In the
Cheddington Studios.
Coming live from the Cheddington Studios.
It's Songs in the Key of Laugh.
And I also want to thank Acast for housing our podcast. And they've monetized it. They've put ads on, which means that we're getting enough listens now that we can monetize and make a little small amount of money, which is why we're also going to start our Patreon and our coffee. So look for some stuff on our Patreon. Go to patreon.com/songsinthekeyoflaugh, and we're going to start putting stuff up there if you want to join Patreon to help Dave and I maybe pay for the Cheddington Studios, because it is an expensive
place to record. So coming up in this week's episode is the Comedy Song Competition.
Yes, the Comedy Song Competition won last year by Eddie Johnson when his song Did It. 200 smackers he walked away with, so enter the competition.
At songsinthekeyoflaugh@gmail.com.
And also, later in this episode, we're going to be working on another improv musical, this time with the theme of the Nativity, because we're going to lead up to our Christmas show. But also, in this particular episode, we're talking about religion and comedy music together, and we go into an interview with the very, very funny Johnny and the Baptists.
I am a very gifted dancer.
Yeah.
I dance with... people have died because they've been too near as I dance. Because I dance with a lot of weight and passion and almost no skill.
Yeah.
But I love to dance.
You love to dance. I'm more of a sort of chair
Whereas
guy.
You're more the sort of... Your favourite thing to do at a wedding is to walk around and finish other people's glasses of wine.
Yeah, exactly. Get the end of all those cigs that have been left about. Yeah, and tell people that I used to be someone.
And while we've been away from the podcast, Dave and I have still been working hand over fist. Is that what you say?
Hand over fist?
Nose to the grind?
Chamois
to the... To the sculpture,
chamois to the whammy.
We've been shirking, working. But we've been working chamois to the sculpture on the Cray Cray Cabaret, which is our Cray Cray Cabaret is our cabaret night we run at the Comedy Store.
Yeah, it's a monthly night where we get lots of stand up comedians, and they come and they sing with my live band,
the Biggish Band.
Yes, yeah.
And it's a lot of fun. That's a great night. And we've had some great guests on. We've had Rich Hall's been on. We've had Sophie Duker's been on.
Marcus Brigstock.
I mean, the list goes on and on. It does. And on. Sarah Louise Young was on them, one of the last ones.
So good.
Yeah.
Yes.
And then coming up later in the year, we've got people like Suze Kempner, who is a phenomenal singer.
Yeah, I cannot wait to play for her as well. That's going to be wonderful.
What have you been doing, though, Dave? You've got some of your own projects going on. You've been traveling around the world with the Amy Winehouse Band.
Yes, we did a nice European tour with the Amy Winehouse Band, which was great. So we did Germany, Poland, France, Belgium, Luxembourg, a couple of other places. Yeah. It was really, really great. And then also, and my baby's been getting a bit older.
Yep, she's 17 years old now. And smoke cigarettes.
She's drinking, she's smoking, she's got a smoking jacket. She's just started crawling and has got her first tooth, so I'm not getting any sleep.
Yeah, fantastic. Yeah. I don't have any of that. All I've done is put together my box set.
Ooh.
Of all of my comedy recordings, which is yet to come out, but probably will come out at some point during this series of Songs in the Key of Laugh. Now, on today's episode, we wanted to discuss religion and comedy music. It's a great juxtaposition. Obviously, comedy music is going to be somewhat blasphemous, maybe a bit sacrilegious.
A bit. I mean, hugely. So me and Phil, Phil and I, sorry, had a conversation about this earlier on. And we've been, I threw out the idea of this nativity that we're going to be doing later on. And I do now slightly regret it. So we both have very differing views on religion. And
Well, it just makes you think God's a bit of a perv. Let's come like brass tacks. Pervo God.
I don't think of God as a perv. I think
I bet God even thinks God's a perv.
He probably does.
If God wasn't a perv, why did he make us naked? I remember growing up into such a religious family, and one of the first songs I heard that was so devoutly anti-Christian was by a band called XTC. Andrew Partridge wrote a song called Dear God, and if you're English, you'll probably remember this. It had a little boy sing at the beginning, and the lyrics are, Dear God, I hope you get the letter, and I pray you can make it better down here. I don't mean a big reduction in the price of beer, but all the people that you made in your image, see them starving on their feet because they don't get enough to eat from God. I can't believe in you. And I just remember, and then Andy's voice comes in. I just thought, that's so powerful. It's such a, but it's so sweet and beautiful having this little kid sing it. And then comedy songs that affected me that sort of were like that Tim Minchin song about the Pope.
Oh, yeah, of course.
Fuck the motherfucker, fuck the motherfucker, fuck the motherfucker, he's a fucking motherfucker. Fuck the motherfucker, fuck the fucking fucker, fuck the motherfucker, he's a total fucking fucker. Fuck the motherfucker, fuck the motherfucker, fuck the motherfucker, fucking fuck the motherfucker. Fuck the motherfucker, fuck the motherfucking Pope.
Now, I know that we mentioned him a lot on this podcast, and one day he will join us.
We hope.
But obviously there is the Bo Burnham song about From God's Perspective as well, which is absolutely wonderful, and it really makes you think as well. There's one that I've just thought of, actually, which is James Corden, right? Who did he used to work with? The guy from Gavin and Stacey. You know the
Rob
one.
Rob Brydon.
No, the other one, the young one.
Oh, Horn.
Yes, yeah, Matt Horn. Yeah. Right. So they did a song which was it went. Jesus, he won't go down. Jesus, he won't go down. You know where this is going, yeah? Jesus, he won't go down on you. Which I always thought was quite funny, but I was rifling through YouTube as we knew that this was going to be our topic, and I came across a song by Garfunkel and Oates, the song is called "A Song About God and Butt Stuff."
Never learned about the birds and bees. I was taught to keep an aspirin in between my knees because the Bible says premarital sex is wrong. But Jason says that guys can't wait that long, and I don't want to lose him to someone who. Do him. I need to figure something out. Well, there's a loophole in the scripture that works really well, so I can get him off without going to hell. It's my Hail Mary, full of grace. In Jesus' name, we go to fifth base.
Now, when you asked me to pick a song to play, which had a bit of comedy and a bit of religion, there was one that came to mind instantly for me.
Right.
And it is probably the most obvious one that you would think of as well. It's Every Sperm is Sacred.
Right.
By Monty Python. You know the song, don't you?
Yeah, of course. Everyone knows it.
Everybody knows it. So I'll play it for you, shall I?
Okay.
There are Jews in the world. There are Buddhists. Mm-hmm. There are Hindus and Mormons. And then there are those that follow Muhammad. But I've never been one of them. I'm a Roman Catholic and have been since the day I were born. The one thing they say about Catholics is they take you as soon as you're warm. You don't have to be a six-footer. You don't have to have a great brain. You don't have to have any clothes on. You're a Catholic the moment Dad came. Because every sperm is sacred, every sperm is great. If a sperm is wasted, God gets quite irate.
I love that.
Well, I hope you all had a lovely sing-along to that one at home.
Sacrilegious, but also oddly moving, that song. Like, there's something...
I think you're completely right,
there's
yeah.
something personal about it. And I think a lot of songs like that, a lot of country songs especially, have that same sort of... You can tell they're believers to a certain extent, but they're also sort of mocking and being slightly sacrilegious for humor's sake. And this song is one you might remember from Bobby Bear. And this is, I think this, when I remember as a young Christian kid, think this was the funniest thing in the world. Goes like,
okay.
Drop kick me Jesus through the goalposts of life, end over end, neither left nor the right. Straight through the heart of them righteous uprights. Drop kick me Jesus through the goalposts of life. Make me, oh make me, Lord, more than I am. Make me a piece in your master game plan. Free from the earthly temptations below. I've got a will, Lord, if you've got the toe. Drop kick me Jesus to the goalposts of life. End over end, neither left nor the right. Straight through the heart of them righteous uprights. Drop kick me Jesus to the goalposts of life. One more verse. We do another verse.
Okay, why not? Yeah.
Bring on the brothers who've gone on before, all of the sisters who've knocked at the door, all the departed dear loved ones of mine. Stick 'em up front in the offensive line. Drop kick me Jesus to the goalposts of life. End over end, neither left nor the right. Straight through the heart of them righteous uprights. Drop kick me Jesus through the goalposts of life. I don't even know if I played that properly, but drop kick me Jesus through the goalposts of life. End over end, neither left nor the right. Straight through the heart of them righteous uprights. Drop kick me Jesus through the goalposts of life.
Gorgeous.
Now, last series, we improvised a musical. We called it our dictionary musical, where we opened a dictionary, put our fingers down on a page, and started singing. David would play, and I would sing. And it started off with the word monsoon, which became the theme of the whole musical. And we wrote in scene by scene. But this year, we thought we'd try something a little bit different. As we're leading up, this series leads up to Christmas, we thought we'd try to write a nativity. But, of course, we know what the story is of the nativity. And also, we don't have a dictionary.
No, we're now in the Cheddington Studios.
Yeah,
but we thought
it doesn't really matter if you just open any book. I've got a book here. Put your finger down on it and just use the word. It's the same as opening a dictionary. But the only book we've got in the studio is Piano Servicing, Tuning, and Rebuilding for the Professional, the Student, and the Hobbyist. And it's by Arthur A. Reblitz, which is almost like Rebuilts.
It almost is. I am already regretting this. We've gone through like the many stages that we need to go through for our plot, and as we were doing so, I realized immediately that doing a nativity with Phil was going to be an absolute disaster. So I'm really looking forward to this.
No, it's not a disaster, but if you are anyone with religious inclinations, you might not want to listen to this.
Sorry.
There we go. We're going to open the book.
Open the book.
I'll put my finger down.
Okay.
And the word is glue.
The word is glue. And what are we? What's our first stage here, Phil? What's the first thing that happens in the Nativity?
Well, I think the angel of the Lord, Gabriel, comes to Mary to tell her that God's going to make her pregnant. That's good.
I think that sounds about right. So, okay.
I mean, God hasn't made her pregnant yet.
No, he hasn't, no.
Maybe he has and she doesn't know and Gabriel's come to tell her.
Well,
either way.
So, okay.
Gabriel's kind of like the glue in the story. Oh, the glue. Oh, the glue. Gosh.
Okay. Right, what kind of feel should we go for?
Well, it's the opening of a nativity. So
the opening of a nativity.
Something grand, I would imagine.
Something grand.
Nativity.
I am the angel Gabriel, and I've come down to speak to you. Mary, I'm going to tell you tonight exactly what you've got to do. God's going to come upon you and fill you with his glue. You're going to have a baby, and he's going to be a Jew. God's glue, he's gonna fill you with God's glue. God's glue, God's glue. Mary felt inside her a baby grew. And the angels sing, the angels sing. God's glue, God's glue. God's gonna fill you with his glue. God's glue.
God's glue.
And Mary knew,
Mary
inside
knew.
Her a baby grew.
Inside her a baby grew.
The king of the Jews. The king of the Jews. The king of the Jews. God's glue.
Comedy song competition time.
Contest. It's contest.
It's a competition. It's a competition.
This is our third series of the contest. We've had Canadian Space were the first winner, and then we had Eddie Johnson.
Eddie Johnson won
last year's with his Did It song, which we thought was hilarious. And the winner wins £200, and the two runners up win £50 each. So it's a pretty hefty win for the competition winners.
It is, and this year it's gone global.
Yes.
We've been getting entries literally from all over the world.
Yeah,
it's very exciting.
Swedish entries.
French entries.
We've had a couple of English entries, obviously.
Obviously, and then this week's
a Scottish entry.
Oh, yes, there is, yes.
And this week?
This week we've got an entry from Los Angeles.
Yes.
California.
Yes.
The band is Tall Boy Special, and the song is Mrs. DeMartinez.
Mrs. DeMartinez teaches yoga in the park. She puts rose petals in her water bottle. She got that from a Home and Garden magazine. She caps her class size at 15. Same number of students as when she taught middle school math.
She taught us middle school math, still teaches middle school math.
Ooh, for someone who wrote us up every time we were late. She sure is flexible. Ooh, she'll move your mat next to hers if you don't participate. She's still got principles. Mrs. DeMartinez waits tables at McCormick and Schmick's. She wears a My Teacher's a Hero button.
She got it from a Home and Button magazine.
She enforces indoor voices at the table and moves your seat if you eat off each other's plates.
She'll keep you after dessert. See me after dessert.
Ooh, for someone who would not
glass. She sure is hospitable. She won't accept your tips if you don't show your work. She's still got principles.
Mrs. DeMartinez is a rookie on the Mets. She'll be starting pitcher in the postseason. I read it in a Home in Baseball magazine. She taunts the A's by calling them the F's. Mike Piazza's parents chaperone away games.
When she takes the mound, she walks out to this song.
Mrs. DeMartinez works 47 jobs. She's every tri-state Santa, and she's the real Santa Claus.
She's a dungeonist crab catcher and Seth Rogen's writing partner.
She's an oral surgeon and she's the green M&M.
Whoa!
Taxis and comb, she crashes the system at H&R Block.
The same one where she works a
Martinez is a full-time mom.
But that doesn't pay anything, so at night she drives for Lyft.
That was a Tall Boy special with their song Mrs. DeMartinez, which is the first entry in the comedy song contest for Series 3.
It's a competition.
It's a contest.
Do you write comedy songs? If you do, this is the competition for you. Please send your entries, your amazing songs, into songsinthekeyoflaugh@gmail.com. You could win yourself £200 if you win, or £50 if you're a runner-up. Send your entries in to songsinthekeyoflaugh@gmail.com.
Our special guests for the first episode of Series 3 are a comedy duo who I think they're fantastic. They are political, they're sound, they're funny, they sing amazingly well, and they sound fantastic. This is our interview with the wonderful Johnny and the Baptists.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
That's your own fault, but you'll know them soon.
You boy, you will.
This jingle has been personalized for a guest that we hope that you recognize. And this week their name is
Insert Name Here.
Johnny the Baptist. Yay. Hey, it's Johnny and the Baptist, everybody.
Hello.
Johnny the Baptist, it's Johnny Donahoe and Paddy Gervers. And am I saying that? Gervers, is that
it's,
right?
It's Gervers, but it's also Gervers. A really weird name, so I don't Gervers. Blame you. Gervers, like a jerk.
I've always called you Gervers.
Yeah, I know.
You get it all the time. But what if it was Gervers, wouldn't it be a J with the Gervers?
It's some kind of weird Scando thing.
It's Scandinavian.
Yeah, that it's,
is it?
Yeah.
Like, so Gervers.
Yeah, but actually that's closer.
Yeah. So if you kind of like hiccup yourself on the J, Gervers.
Yeah, exactly. Just do it weird and people will assume that you're correct. Okay.
Yeah. I'll try. What does it mean?
What does it mean?
Oh, meatballs.
Yeah, it's sort of egg. Yeah, like, no, I don't know. It's one of those names that's changed so many times that it's just like, at least you didn't say, lots of people say Gervais and you didn't, so I'm pleased
with
that.
Oh, no. Oh, like, yeah.
You're so not Gervais.
Thank you.
I can't think of a less Gervais person.
Oh, that's a lovely thing to say.
It's us going on the poster next year.
Gervais, well, yeah, great. Well, here we are. So, you guys, it's Johnny the Baptist, everybody. David, how much do you know about Johnny the Baptist?
Only that I've listened now to the full back catalogue, but I'd love for you to tell me a bit more.
Well, you guys, they are well known for Radio 4 listeners, for any anyone that's sort of part of the leftist movement, anyone that knows Mark Thomas, you've been around for over a decade now.
Yeah.
Which I was actually surprised when I was. It seems like that time has gone by really quickly. Yeah. I remember seeing you very early on. I think maybe it might have been the Distraction Club, and I think that Amy may still have been playing with you at that point.
That's
I can't
right.
remember if that was. Yeah.
We had a wonderful violin player, Amy, for the first year or so, but she. Mm. She wanted a more stable income, I believe.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay. Which is fair enough.
Okay.
Wonderful person.
I believe she said happier life.
Happier life.
Right. Which is almost impossible in modern Britain.
Yeah.
So,
yeah,
well,
right.
So she got a job as a nurse.
Yeah.
Well done, Amy.
Round of applause. Yeah.
Exactly.
So guys, where did your name come from?
Oh, yeah. Now, see, here's the thing, right?
Yeah.
If you've ever been in a band, I'm sure this is true for most people, you come up with a name much quicker than you're stuck with the name.
Yeah.
So yes. I came up with the name Johnny and the Baptists for my solo project after I'd been in a double act with a guy called Danny for six years. And we stopped working together. He was starting a family and he didn't want to do comedy anymore. And I wanted to do more music and we'd sort of been a sketch act. So I said, right, I'm going to do songs and I'm going to call myself Johnny and the Baptists and it's just going to be me. And then Paddy and I got sort of chatting and we met properly and we said, well, let's work together. And we already had a gig booked under Johnny and the Baptists. So then we did that gig and then someone came to see it and went, oh, we liked you. Would you come and play this other gig? And then we got booked to play a festival in Croatia. That was our third gig.
Yeah.
by which point, like, they were like, our name was like on a poster.
Yeah.
And then that's it, you're stuck with it. So I'm not as megalomaniacal as I sound for insisting my name is in it and yours isn't.
Yeah.
It's just sort of one of those, oh, I feel nice.
And it sounds good.
It does. It sounds
better
than.
It's got plosives in it and it sounds.
Better
it,
than. It, our first, one of our first ever gigs, Colin Holt, the comedian, he's a wonderful comedian,
yes.
Was comparing.
And a man.
But Colin is a really good friend, although he could not remember the name of us as he went to introduce us. So he introduced us as Johnny and his friend.
Ooh, that's good.
And I wish I wish we were called that.
it's a much better name.
Johnny and his friend.
Yeah, and it just sort of stuck. Yeah.
Yeah. And then you sort of, and then we did a, and then we did our first Edinburgh show, and then you're like, well, that's it now.
And then the joke was that I was plural.
Yes.
But then, like, I don't know, but then people don't really think about that. So the question is always like, why is there only one of you? So immediately it begins as a disappointment, like every show. It's like, no, it's just this guy. And I was like 19 at the time, so I wasn't going to correct. I was just like, yeah, okay, yeah.
When you record on your albums, though, you have full backing band. And do any of those players ever play with you? Do you ever play with a full band?
Rob Sell, who's just this amazing guy who produced pretty much all of our albums since about 2014.
Yeah.
He played, he's done several tours with us.
Mm.
He plays keyboards and percussion and
sax.
He's properly a sax player.
Is it Colin Sell's son?
It's Colin Sell's son. So Colin
I know
Sell.
Rob.
Oh, do you?
Really?
Yeah. He's played sax with me before.
Oh, he's
as well.
Brilliant,
oh,
isn't
wow.
he?
He's amazing.
Colin Sell, if you don't know, is the piano player on I'm Sorry, I Haven't a Clue.
Yeah.
And we couldn't get Colin.
No.
So he's too expensive.
No.
So we got Rob.
Nice. And Rob's dope. So yeah, when we make the records, Rob knows like every jazz and session musician under the sun, and he's toured with everyone. So Rob will normally put the word out, and then we write all the music in the studio, and then you just get these amazing jazzers show up, and then you just sing them the bits, and then they do it, and then we end up making something with like 15 musicians on, which is cool.
And I think they quite enjoy it because it's not serious.
Yeah, it's not like working with Jamie Cullum, is it?
It's not working with Jake, you know, because we're a lot taller.
Yeah, a lot taller. Yeah.
You know, you can
take that, Cullum.
Yeah, you can actually see us.
Yeah, the dog's finally coming for you, Cullum.
That is literally punching down.
It is. Oh, I'm
that
sorry.
Is literally punching down.
Take that, you tiny billionaire.
They're all tiny.
They're all tiny. Yeah, they are.
It's surprising. You think they're tall, but they're
not.
How
tall is Elon Musk?
He's about 4'7".
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, famously, the devil takes your shins when you make a bargain with
them.
That's
right. They actually makes a flute out of them. Makes you play a song that he's written.
So many flutes. Yeah.
Jeff Bezos is no bigger than your thumb.
Yeah, exactly.
Put him in your pocket.
But what he does is he's got enough money to hire people around him to look smaller than him.
That's right.
They stand really far behind him.
He makes them stand. In another room.
That is what Tom Cruise does, isn't it?
Tom Cruise. Tom Cruise uses phone books, I believe.
Wow.
Like, that's been known for Tom Cruise to stand on phone books during scenes, so he's the same height as whoever he's... I was going to say Helen Hunt, but I don't know if he's been in a film with Helen Hunt. I just love Helen Hunt.
I love Helen Hunt. I love the idea that she is...
I love Helen Hunt.
She's amazing. She's an incredible actress.
She's in London right now.
Woman. But really?
Yeah.
How do you know that?
She's doing a show because I'm going to see a show.
What are we doing?
Wednesday at the Old Vic. I know. What are we doing? I'm taking time out of my Helen Hunt schedule to do this. Oh, you laugh. Oh, you laugh. But you guys, have you seen her work? Have you seen Quarterback Princess? Because that is just that film. Yep. She's one of her first films.
Is Cruise going to be there?
Yeah, well, no, it's Mark McKinney from The Kids in the Hall. Oh, but Cruise might be there.
He might bring a couple of yellow pages and prop himself up.
if he is there, you won't see him. No.
They make him stand right at the front of the stage. He'd be a terrible stage actor because he'd be at the front of the stage with everyone else but 14 feet behind. So let's talk about the genesis of this group. I've read what has been written up on Wikipedia, but maybe you guys could elaborate. Maybe you could tell us the story, because it sounds like such a genuine, I hate to use the word organic, but it just seems like it happened so naturally and so easily, and your friendship you're so content. Tell us the story of how you guys came to be a band. Please.
Okay. Well,
I thought you were going to kiss me. You did a very, very
thought about it.
That would have been
for the
great
listeners at home. They have just almost kissed.
Is this the moment?
This is it. This is it.
This is it. This is it.
13 years in.
Yeah. Well, it's funny.
Look what it did for Sean Walsh's career. Come on.
That's right. Yeah. Really. Yeah. All right. We better not do that.
Okay. Yeah.
Well, I get what you mean by not liking the word organic, because like this sort of was, but also like, I don't know. Hang on.
I was interested.
We met at a wedding, proper.
So what we should do? Wait a minute. Sorry to interrupt, but what we should do is we should put Johnny in a booth with headphones on where he can't hear you. You tell the story, then we bring him out and question about it. And see.
I'll put my other ear on.
So we met properly at a wedding, and we got real pissed together. And you could now I don't dance, and you couldn't dance because of your ankle.
I twisted my ankle, and I am a very gifted dancer.
Yeah,
I dance with people have died because they've been too near as I dance, because I dance with a lot of weight and passion and almost no skill.
Yeah.
But I love to dance.
You love to dance. I'm more of a sort of chair
Whereas
guy.
You're more the sort of, your favourite thing to do at a wedding is to walk around and finish other people's glasses of wine.
Yeah, exactly. Get the end of all those cigs that have been left about. Yeah, and tell people that I used to be someone. we end up sat together at the table, and I was working as a session musician at the time, and I'd broken my arm, so it wasn't going great.
You'd broken your arm, so you couldn't play guitar.
I couldn't play guitar, so I was learning other things for a while.
One-handed keys,
and I was working on my music theory and all that bollocks. And then you had just come out of a double act, as Johnny mentioned earlier, and. Yep.
And I was doing stand-up.
You were doing stand-up, and then you basically wanted to be in a band, and I wanted to be a comedian.
Yeah.
And so we thought we'd start hanging out and sort of teaching each other skills, and then we immediately, Johnny mentioned he had this good gig booked. We were like, oh, we'll do that. And it turned out it wasn't like a 5-minute spot. This was like an hour.
Yeah.
It was
40 minutes.
It was 40 minutes at midnight.
It's a big gig.
Yeah. and so we had to write
40 minutes
of material in about a week. And we immediately got a manager. Who just believed in us for no good reason.
But the thing is this was very much, for both of us, our side project.
Yeah.
And it just, it still hasn't quite been on the side yet.
Yeah.
It's still been the main job ever since. Like, I think it was, we're both like, well, we'll do this as our side project, but you're going to do your stuff and I'm going to do mine.
Yeah.
And we just haven't really got back to doing our own stuff since, because people kept booking us.
This is more fun.
It sounds like you've satisfied that itch in both of you to go one way. You've kind of met in the middle. Because the thing that strikes me about the songs is that they are actually just really musically and sonically gorgeous. And as well as being fun and poignant and political, they also work as songs. If you were to, and as I was listening to them to reacquaint myself with your work, one of the things that strikes me is that they are incredibly hummable, memorable songs. If you were to replace them, they are reminiscent of, now you maybe you get this, but they're reminiscent of early Bare Naked Ladies.
That's nice.
Thanks, man.
That's a real compliment.
Yeah.
They're a fantastic band.
There's a melody about it but a lot of musical comedy falls down the crack of just once they get, you start, all starts to sound the same because the singer, you know, they're not necessarily musicians, but you guys sound like musicians first who have come to this and applied comedy to it. The way that the Bare Naked Ladies, that's what it reminds me of.
Yeah. So. Well, I think you'll know this better than anyone else, but the people make the mistake of thinking musical comedy is a good in. You know, it's a good starting point if you're learning comedy. And actually, it's the worst. If you're thinking of starting comedy, this is the hardest thing to do because you've got to do two jobs. And it's much easier to just do jokes or just to write songs because you have to do both as well as the other or the whole thing falls down.
Yeah.
And so I think the fact that there's two of us and we're sort of kind of very geared towards... It's always been a very easy double act without any rivalry because... I don't know how to do a lot of what you do and vice versa.
Mm.
And you know what your job is really, and then you kind of learn from the other and get better at the other thing, but you're still kind of head of one department each.
Yeah.
And then you kind of can really build on that rather than disagree or feel like one of you is getting there.
Yeah, and I think that I'm glad that comes across as well because it's like, I think that, what we didn't want to do at the start was write songs that you listen to once and go, that was brilliant. And then the second time you're like, well, I've heard the joke now and now it's just quite a dull song and I know when the punch is coming. Like, they have to be good enough to like listen to in isolation because you also like them.
Yes.
And that was sort of the original goal. And I think it's sort of worked because like, and that's going back to working with Rob as well. It's like Rob was quite a key part in realizing that. In that we got to actually work in studios and work with musicians and make sort of, instead of having an idea and going, well, we'll use these three chords on a guitar, you could be like, wouldn't it be cool if we got a choir? I wish we had a Hammond organ player. And we did have the sort of the friendships and the resources to make that happen on records and then have a different version of the live show, different things on the albums. And I don't know, it keeps it fresh.
Mm.
And so when you actually sit down and start writing your tune, who's writing the music mainly? Who's writing the lyrics mainly? What do you both play?
Well, it doesn't. So I would have said on the very first record 11 years ago that I wrote 70% 80% of the words and you wrote 80% of the music. That was definitely true the very first record, but it really very quickly became something that we started to share. I'm very good with melody and nothing like as skillful a musician as you. I play the piano, but I sort of honk it out rather than playing it lovingly. And I'm good at melody and I'm good at words. But I'm not good at arrangement like you are and all those sorts of things. So we sort of know different things, but the job, like the most recent record, there are songs where I've written all the music and you've written all of the words. And that's very sort of interesting. It's really happened quite naturally.
Yeah, it's really cool. And we get to, and also because we tour like, you know, fucking 8 months of the year or something like that. Like quite a lot of the songs are now written trying to make the other one laugh. So we get to do that. You know, you write them in sound checks and you do them. Yeah. And so you sort of improv your way through a first draft. And then it's
most of our stuff is an audio recording on one of our phones of one of us basically being a dick.
Yeah.
For ages until you have a good idea.
Yeah.
And you playing a riff on the guitar and me kind of sort of squelching over the top of it to annoy you.
Yeah. And we've got a little WhatsApp chat that you just send each other. Like I think like the closer of our most recent record is just because I think I texted Johnny and said monkey funeral, and Johnny was like, absolutely.
Yeah.
like what are they up to? Like how did they pull that off? You know, like, and then you listen through all these recordings and go, actually, you know, we've got that, you know, Tracy Chapman style one. We could pop this onto here and then we can add that joke that we've been trying to fit in for 10 years. And then and then suddenly you built something and go, wouldn't it be cool if there was like lasers in it? And then you call Rob and then Rob, you know, trudges around finding lasers. We don't pay him. Wow. Like, don't worry.
Well, he doesn't need to be paid. He's being paid with the joy of a monkey funeral.
That's right. You know,
of bringing that to life is one of those.
Exactly.
Yeah. I think that's when I was traveling in Corking the Juice Pigs, which is another dumb name that we got stuck with.
Love it.
and it was the same thing. We needed a name and stayed up all night just going Bill's Bargain Basement. You know, Rudy's Sledge, you know, and just... Rudy's Sledge is actually quite nice.
Rudy's Sledge.
Ska Band, all songs about snow. Anyway, so the idea of making each other laugh was kind of key to the whole why the thing worked, is that we never wanted it to ever take it seriously. It's quite difficult in modern comedy to not take it seriously because it's such a it's an industry, it's a business, and there's all that side of it you have to take seriously or have someone else do it for you. But to still be able to make each other laugh like that is kind of key to the longevity of the duo. Or of the project,
mate, absolutely. You know? Because like I also with like extended touring, if you don't actually like each other, I think it comes across on stage eventually.
And
I don't think either of us are good enough actors to pretend that we're getting on.
So we had to get on.
So we had to, and then once you're like. Because once you've been doing it for a while, and also you're like, oh no, now we suddenly run a business together, and now like Johnny has kids, and I'm very involved in their lives, and now we live at different ends of the country, and it's like, oh, it's not just going on stage together anymore. It's like we're both sort of in, and it makes it quite easy. That walking on stage is a bit of a relief because you're like, oh well, now we don't have to do any of the other stuff. We can just dick around for an hour.
You're right. I mean, it's not as big a business as Amazon.
No, not yet.
you're too tall for that.
You're too tall to manage it.
Is that our shuttle isn't quite making it out of?
I mean, we're really not business people. We've got a joint account now.
Yeah, and it is not good.
And that is really like that has been.
What's great is you can block each other's transactions on it, and so whenever one of us orders a Deliveroo, it asks the other one if it's all right, and you can be like, "Fuck this, mate!"
Oh, that sounds like a great game, actually.
through listening to so much of your work now, your
stuff is quite conversational. The way that you write these lyrics, some of them you'll have these lovely hooks that you keep on throwing in, but a lot of your lyrics are very conversational. And it makes sense that if you've got this WhatsApp group and you keep on throwing in comments, those are what really, really get me, is that you'll have the most random comment just be thrown in at the most like opportune moment in there, which is so, so nice, and it's so, so silly. But you also talk about some really quite serious things, and you have a massive amount of political satire in there. Can you tell us a little bit about that, please?
Well, we haven't really done as much politics of late because, as you know, everything's now fine.
Yeah.
And such no need.
Yeah. You guys actually healed the country.
We've solved everything, and so there's no point.
They're doing it themselves. You literally turn on the news. If you put a little drum beat underneath it, it would sell itself, wouldn't it? Yeah. So.
We wrote really political shows more in sort of 2014, 15, 16, we were really writing very political shows. And it was because the Tories were just as bad then. It's just no one seemed to be engaging with this awful route we were going down. We found it impossible not to kind of talk about it.
Yeah.
We're still very political people, and we still like our show, but our shows have kind of focused more on things like mental health and grief. We wrote about because of the lockdown have been the sort of themes of our last shows, because I think there's just such a sort of toxicity about politics now that it's very hard to engage with on any way and be okay.
Mm.
You know, I feel like it was just it became quite a sort of miserable experience.
Yeah, I think it still suffuses everything that we do, because like this last show, as Johnny said, is all about the death of a friend, and then we were like, oh, no politics in this one, and then we sort of listened to it back and we're like, oh, it turns out we're still very angry about the royal family.
Yeah, there's quite a lot of stuff.
Exactly as you say, there's like thrown in comments and stuff like that. As anything off the dome is still going to be quite political, even when we've angled it a particular way.
We had about six songs about the Queen in the last tour.
Yeah.
And the tour finished on about the 4th of September.
Yeah.
She died, I think, like 9 days later, or maybe 8 days later. And I really, like, She held on for us. I really think she did.
Yeah.
I'm not a fan of the royal family. I'm not, you know, I'm very much a Republican, not in the American sense, but in the British sense.
Yeah.
But I do think she really did us a solid there.
Yeah.
I was really appreciated, because the second she went, that material was gone. There was no chance we could ever do any of that again.
Wow. And, well, we could do some of it.
We'll keep
all the pedo stuff.
We kept all the stuff about her, you know. Keep all the stuff about her pedo son.
Yeah, like, you know, pedo kids.
That's not about her directly, though.
No,
and we were still doing all the Prince Philip stuff even after he died. But he did kill Diana.
Yeah,
so you've got to...
That's what this show's about.
Let's talk about your influences, because I think that's always an interesting thing to find out where. And I don't just mean musical influence. I just mean things. What are you listening to now? Are there other musical comedy acts that you want to give a plug to, or is there something that your parents used to play to you that's affected you now? Are you trained, Paddy? Did you go to the conservatoire? Like, so tell us a little bit about things that influence you and make the music.
I'm nearly trained. Yes. Yeah, so my family are all musicians. There's something like five musicians and two comedians.
Yeah.
And my stepsister's a stand-up as well.
But she's also a drummer.
She used to be a drummer.
Yeah, she used to be a drummer.
And so my dad taught us all instruments growing up.
Your dad's been in a lot of bands.
Dad's been in a lot of bands, like a bad number of bands.
He's a double bass player, but he also plays... He plays jazz piano and sings.
He's awesome, and he taught us all different instruments as kids, and like my brother's a bass player.
Your brother was the bass player in Foals.
Yeah.
For about 10 years before he retired to live in France.
Yeah, raise his kids.
That's interesting, isn't it? If you're that successful, you can retire.
Yeah.
What a lovely life.
Yeah, what?
Well, he's a handyman now.
He's a handyman. And your sister, your older sister, sings with...
everyone.
Sings with everyone.
She's on tour at the moment.
And she's done backup vocals for everyone and toured with the Fleetwood Mac.
Yeah.
Right, okay.
She did...
What are they called?
Rumours.
Rumours.
Yeah. She did a duet with Jason Donovan.
She did.
Yeah, that was cool. Yeah. But like all of that... So the dad basically got us all into... He was into like Taj Mahal and like Eric Bibb and Bonnie Raitt and stuff like that. So like that got me into guitar. But he tricked me with guitars. He said he wouldn't let me play guitar till I was 10 because he said that guitarists, you can't learn guitar unless you have a grounding understanding of saxophone, bass, drums and piano. And so he taught me those and then got me a guitar when I was 10 and was like, right, now you understand and there's nothing to do with
it. He knew you'd never learn any of the others.
He knew I'd never bother with any of the others if he didn't lie to me.
So that's quite good.
And then, I was getting into comedy music when I was a teenager and I used to, I did sketch comedy and stuff when I was a teenager. And then, we started, just before we were working together, I was listening to people like, Gary Lestrange.
Wayne Shepherd.
Yeah, Wayne Shepherd. Yeah. Like things like that. And was just like, oh, this can't, like, it turns out this can be really good. It's like you said, this can exist without being a gimmick. You just have to look a little bit further than what's on telly a lot of the time.
And the thing about Gary Lestrange is that those songs, the sort of, I was thinking of like, Is My Toaster Sentient?
Yeah.
When I first heard that, I was like, this is a real song. This isn't a parody. Yes. This is so good.
Great singer. And
then it's funny as well.
Yeah.
It's just like, I would happily listen to that record in the background while I was working, regardless of the fact that if you also listen quite concentratedly, you'd hear the jokes.
And that's the thing. And then you got me into a lot more comedy music and showed me that it was kind of properly put, this is you, Johnny, and showed me that it was sort of possible to do, and there were other people doing it as like musicians who were having a good, just enjoying their life, and instead of being like stand-ups holding guitars playing two chords and being like, I'll just do my set over some chords, like there were people who were doing fucking amazing stuff. And then I started listening to more music that was just lyrically interesting. Like, musicians who have humour in, like, what they do. Like, my favourite band's The Mountain Goats. And John Darnielle, everything he writes, I think, has a bit of wit to it, but it also tells a story. And exactly as you said earlier as well, about conversational lyrics. Like, it doesn't have to be everything rhymes and everything, everything makes sense melodically. And like, Johnny used to, when we were writing songs, if a joke was funnier, he'd be like, oh, just add an extra 2.5 beats there. And my musician's brain would be like, absolutely not. Like, that's wild. Why would we do that? And then Joe, no, it's funny. So we started writing songs that were more complicated and served the joke, but it made them more, I don't know, more interesting. Yeah. What were you listening to when we started performing together?
Well,
Colin used to have a band. Colin Holt. Do you remember Mighty Beast?
Yeah, Colin Holt had
called
a band called the Mighty Beast.
Great Beasts.
Great Beasts or something. They were great. I remember listening to Sir Jay Foreman, who's a great musical comedian. Yeah. There's a song of his called Skin Sofa, which is in 5/4.
Yeah.
I remember thinking, oh, that's amazing. You can, like, this is really funny and it's five beats of the bar. That's like, this is, I've never seen anyone do that, sort of be kind of musically that interesting. Skin Sofa is a beautiful song. Mm. The chorus is skin sofa,
it's got a nipple.
It's got a nipple. but it's just, so that was really like, oh, you can be musically interesting. And that was quite eye-opening. And Jay had been around for a couple of years when we started and then became a really good friend. Mm. And I really rate Jay. I rate everything, and sometimes Josie and I will just put it on. And also, it's funny how there's something, if you put something on and your 3-year-old also loves it straight away, I feel that's such an extraordinary quality. And I'm not talking about his kid stuff, all his stuff, my kids are just like, this is good stuff. So that's really great.
Yeah, I put together a playlist for some kids recently and had loads of Jonathan Richman on it because has got that, because in the same way as Jonathan Richman is a serious songwriter and one of the original punk rockers, but there's just something really funny and clever but it's him. It's his sense of humor. Mm. He's not trying to make jokes, but it's just, and you can listen to it over and over and over again. The songs are just standalone songs.
But then as other lyricists are like, so Jarvis Cocker, has written three or four songs that are as funny as musical comedy songs, definitely.
Right,
yeah, absolutely.
Right.
That are just like, oh, I wish we could just drop that into our set if it wasn't his. And it would have the same amount of laughs. And Tori Amos, the American pianist singer, I mean, her lyrics are so sort of sardonic and dark and set against the sort of classical style of piano playing that I always thought that's been a huge influence.
I find the same with Grace Petrie as well. Do you know Grace Petrie?
I do, yeah.
Like Grace, especially in the last couple of years, Grace was writing, you know, really serious, amazing, beautiful storytelling songs. And then she said the other day that she noticed that her sets were becoming more the chat in between songs because she was enjoying making people laugh more than she was enjoying doing her songs. So she started putting more humour into her songs, and now, I mean, her set is equally heartbreaking and musical comedy in a way.
Just right.
It's really nice.
That's her personality show.
That we were watching, I was showing someone the Milk Carton Kids that's live at the Lincoln Theatre. And the one striking thing about that is not only the exceptionally great musicians and really tight, that in between songs they make each other laugh a lot.
Yeah.
And then they'll go right into a very kind of quiet, bleak song, but it's only because you can bring people up and down like that, that makes it, that's an exciting thing to watch.
Yeah.
I think it would be really actually shit if they just went from one song to song to song. Because it'd be really hard. Because if you're watching it live, you just want to be, okay, you know that they're actually real people. And they were talking about writing in the van, making each other laugh in the van, and, you know, the van life is a big part of it. Mm. But you did a tour with Lefty Scum.
Yeah,
tour,
with Grace. Was it? Yeah, with Grace and Josie.
Jin Josie,
that was great. That was really fun. And also, like, I think a lot of people, a lot of artists in every genre sort of wish they were in a band always, because of the sort of camaraderie and the feeling you have. And getting to tour as a group of four is quite rare. You know, because it's, you know, you have to split it four ways, so you kind of, it's harder to live on. So getting to do the, we did three Lefty Scum tours in the end. Each one was about sort of 20 dates, and that was so much fun.
That was just great, because also it shows the connection between three things, because on paper you've got Grace, who's a musician, Josie, who's a stand-up, and then us who fall sort of somewhere in between. And you realise that actually we largely have the same audience, because I think it's more about how we get our ideas across. We're all largely making similar points, and we're doing our thing with a similar amount of love. We just sort of choose slightly different mediums for it. So it was a great three, and anyone on the bill could headline, anyone could open, anyone could be middle spot. There wasn't a sort of hierarchy of, well, everyone's here to see this act. Like,
yes.
Oh, it was lovely.
It was it was a long show, though, because we all did 2 20-minute sets, so it was 2 hours. It was an hour either side of an interval, and that was the start of the tour. There was a point, sort of three quarters of the way through, when it was running at 2 hours per half. We're really going to have to do something about this. You know, people are dying of hunger.
No. Are you prone to distraction on stage? In that case, do things sometimes overrun slightly?
I mean, the thing is that I mean I love live work more than anything else ever, and I think a lot of people tour, a lot of comics tour in the hope of getting a TV series. I think we've only ever done broadcast work in the hope of building up our live audience, because we just love performing live. But I mean, there was, I remember a moth flying across the stage.
It was great. That was about 6 weeks ago.
That was about 6 weeks ago, and it was about 20 minutes of the show.
It was then great. It landed on my hand.
Yeah,
and then I was doing a song, and then no one cared about the song.
Yeah.
And then the show became about making sure the moth was okay.
And I wanted to sort of shepherd it and see if I could kind of like, see if we could, you know, like, it just had very good timing.
Yeah, exactly.
You, beforehand, you were mentioned, Phil, about how in a live show you can bring the audience up and you can bring the audience back down. And I was listening to Love You and Hate Bastards, which is one of your live albums, and it's stunning.
Well,
firstly,
thanks, very kind.
I'm gonna try not to cry. Maury.
Thanks, man. Yeah.
It is so beautiful. I cannot listen to it and not cry. I think it's a work of art, but I also love how you've used the same chord sequence and the same melody in a song earlier on in the set to describe, isn't that the birth?
Yeah, yeah. So one's about birth and one's about death.
One's about birth, one's about death.
One halfway through the show, one at the end.
Yeah.
It's so beautiful. And I just wanted to say thank you because it was such a beautiful and cathartic thing to hear. Could you explain just a little about that song?
Yeah, sure. We were writing this show about sort of birth and death, as you say.
I didn't know you were gonna do it. So it was
a weird one.
Yeah. So I wrote the words to the first song is called
Making Up the Numbers.
Making Up the Numbers, and it was about me. It was about the birth of my daughter, and it was talking about the actual birth, the day. So I'm in the true story is that Josie was in a birthing pool, and I was helping. insofar as I was there.
I know that feeling, but
it's really not. It's very much not where. I wasn't key to the whole thing.
Yeah.
But I was, you know, trying to help as best I can. I got in the birthing pool with Josie and they told me to get out. That's very much not what it's for. They were like, what are you doing? This isn't a pool.
I'm doing Lent.
Yeah.
So, they're doing butterflies, right?
Yeah. So that wasn't. So I wrote the song about. I wrote the words to the first half, which was, just telling the story of that day and realising what it is to the responsibility that I suddenly had. And I wrote all of those words in one sitting, just sort of in sat in a chair in my bedroom, which was on the basement, and there was a window that looks out onto the street, and I just sat looking at the street and wrote all those words in one thing, and then I gave them to you, and you wrote the guitar riff that sort of holds the song together, and then I started singing it over and we gradually built a melody together, and that was, I thought, that was it.
Hmm.
And then you came back to me with a draft of Maureen, which is the song about your mum.
Mm.
But you hadn't told me that that's what you were going to do, and you were going to sort of create a sort of diptych.
Yeah.
That was never... And then I had no idea that that was your plan.
No, I mean...
But I don't think it was.
It wasn't.
Sort of
I took it away, and I really liked Making Up the Numbers, and was like, oh, there's a real opportunity here to make... Because that song, you know, being about birth, is sort of very joyous, but like... And
it's bittersweet.
It's bittersweet, it's sort of...
But it is very
joyous. Realising that everything's changed.
Yeah.
And I was like, this actually follows the exact same narrative as when someone dies.
Mm.
And yeah, as it's about the death of my mum when I was a kid. And I went through each line of the song and tried to keep the exact same number of syllables and make sure the line was the same, but a sort of mirror reflection of the other one. So I think the first line of Making Up the Numbers is the midwife's name was Sophie. Yeah. And then the first line of Maureen is the vicar's name was Ronald. And it tells the story of the funeral and what like and the birthing pool and then what happened afterwards and then what life is like after that. And on that recording on Love You Hate Bastards, but I'd showed it to Johnny and Johnny loved it and he helped me edit it a little bit. And then we had a series of about 8 gigs before the album recording, and every night I bailed on performing it. I was like, I can't do this. And then this was our one opportunity. It was at the Phoenix where we do Distraction Club with Phil, and Johnny, I remember you turning to me and being like, you don't have to do this. There are like 200 people here. And I had the words on a thing and I was shaking and all this. And I was like, oh, this is the one opportunity to record it. Otherwise, I'll never, ever.
Otherwise,
look at
it
this
won't
again.
Happen.
And so I did it. And I think about two-thirds through the song, I burst into tears. And then we kept it
all. Well, so does everybody who's listening.
We kept it all in the recording because we got through it and you gave me a big hug. And then we were editing the album with Rob. And Rob said,
you've got to keep this.
And Rob said, look, you've got to keep all of this stuff. Do you want to mix it with me? And Johnny and I were like, no, we can't. And Rob kept calling me in tears and being like, I'm just going to send you a drum. Can you check the levels on the vocal? We went back and forth with it about 15 times. And it's just me singing with a guitar. But Rob was he was unwilling for it to not be perfectly mixed. Because he was like, there can never be another recording of this. And I remember being really grateful to him that he did all of that heavy lifting because neither Johnny or I could through it.
I've forgotten something important, which is that you said earlier, do you play with other people? We said we play with Rob. But that tour we did with Kirsty Newton.
Oh, yeah.
Kirsty. She's been a guest on this podcast as well. Yeah.
She's incredibly funny, brilliant, gifted musician, kind-hearted, wonderful human being. And she played bass and keys, and she's playing keys just before that song. And during that song, Kirsty and I would normally just go off stage and go and sit on the side, and Paddy would do it solo. And the reason for that is that we just found it. We'd just hug while off stage because it's really hard. And then we'd come back on and
then we stopped doing that. And then we'd started doing it where you'd stay on stage when I performed
it.
So
it felt like it was supportive.
Yeah, because it was.
We realised it was a bit hard.
Yeah,
but it's a funny thing, isn't it? It kind of it's the best bit of that show. But I'm really glad we don't do it anymore.
Yeah, so touring that. Like, fuck
it was really
out.
Hard.
Yeah.
I mean, it's perfect.
Oh, thank you.
That's all I'm going to say. It was perfect. I also, after listening, so we thought that we were going to get you onto the last series, but we didn't manage. So I was listening to your full back catalogue then, and this was during the time I just my partner was pregnant, and I was out the back of the house, and I was 6 foot in a hole.
Oh, no.
And I think I've genuinely got to be the only person to have listened to Dig in a Hole, right, whilst I was actually 6 foot down in a hole.
What were you doing? What were you digging?
You were digging a hole.
I was digging a hole. I mean, you know, sometimes you have one of those days where you just got to dig a hole.
Dig 6 foot hole.
I had to dig a 6 foot hole for drainage for our patio, obviously.
Amazing.
What were you burying?
Shh, don't tell them.
Oh, that's mega. That's because digging a hole is just one of those songs that we were like, that would be funny, wouldn't it, if it was just like, I've been digging a hole. And then that became a huge hit because that's the end of the most recent record, and we sent the melody to about 50 of our mates on WhatsApp and said, can you just sing along to this? And so the final chorus is 50 WhatsApp voice recordings all put together of our friends singing along to it.
Yeah.
Amazing.
It's really nice. And
well, it's all the people who it was all the people who got us through the lockdown.
Yeah, they were called the Support Network Choir.
Yeah. Asked them all to sing. And, like, there's a guy, oh, bless him, Laurie, who lived upstairs from you in your flat in Bethnal Green, who is just like the sweetest, kindest man ever. And he was like, I can't sing. It was like, it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
And then we listened to it. It sort of does, because he really can't sing.
Yeah.
But we kept it in because it's really important that, like, that's what a community sounds like.
Also, I'm pretty sure he was quite stoned when he recorded it. So he's about 15 BPM.
Really? Sharp. By the end.
Wasting time. You can hear the bong in the background.
Yeah. And I know another friend of ours was like, oh, I had like 3 glasses of wine before I did that because I've never let anyone hear me sing before.
Yeah.
Nice.
And then Kirsty Newton sent me a 6-part harmony, and I was like, Kirsty, fuck off.
I know.
Like,
she did it all on the fly.
Yeah, she's all on the fly. Actually, I've just thought of a new part. I'll just send it. Hang on. Just wasting. Like, it's like, oh.
Well, guys, it's been so nice talking to you today.
You too as well.
If you've been for our regular listeners, you know that at this point in the proceedings, we ask our guests to perform a little number or sing a little something or do something that live that sort of it's a little bonus feature on our podcast. Do you guys have something in mind that you can give us?
Yes.
Yeah, okay, you've said yes without.
Well, I said yes because I'm very sort of kind, placatory person. I don't like to. And you go and get the guitar.
You think of what
and
to
I'll
do.
Think of what
Where's
to do.
The guitar?
Okay. Yes. Yeah. Okay. It must be somewhere.
Okay. I'll be back in 1 minute. That's a bass.
Okay. There's no rush.
Okay. My bass is here.
We normally do. We normally are a bit more. I normally send out an email with the details on it, and I think I was a bit lax this time, wasn't I?
No, I think, but also I'm really glad you didn't, because we normally don't read emails. So normally people are like, "Did you read the email?" And we're like, "Yeah,
sure, yeah, exactly." Who? Yeah.
Did you tune it?
Yes, very quickly as I was coming up the stairs.
What song do you want to do?
I thought that was very much your job whilst I was away.
I was busy chatting. Yeah. I was keeping the fort down. So what was that? You wanted to just do a song, did you say?
Yeah. Yeah. So at this point, in the proceedings, we normally ask our guests to do a little performance, sing a song to send you off out of the interview. Do you guys have anything in mind?
So this was the opening song to our last show. And it is the song that we wrote that I feel most sums up the lockdown and the last two, three years.
Yeah.
Right.
And it's called Never Too... Well, we've got... The song I think that really most sums up the lockdown is we rewrote the big hit by Chumbawamba. Do you remember the big song?
Yes.
I get knocked down. And that's enough for me. Just a new, just a much more on-brand bit for how we're all feeling. But this song is called "Never Too Late." This is a proper song,
right?
You don't have a capo, so we're gonna
do it in a different key.
We're doing it in a different key that is probably a bit. It's a bit lower, so it's a bit better for an acoustic.
Yeah.
Early, it's only 11 in the morning. So.
I love how much you're justifying this before we do it. Yeah. And he said, bear in mind, we were quite unwell at the time. right, let's give it a go. So you're going to have to sing the synth line. I'll sing it with you. It's like, okay, so here's the kit. Happiness is out there,
but out there is very big.
You've never been good at finding things.
You once got lost in a boots.
You were looking for Rennies.
Then you got overwhelmed and hot.
If happiness is even real, then finding it is not for you. But it's never too late to give up. Everyone will only let you down. What doesn't kill you will hurt you. Do you really want to take the risk? What goes up must come down. So maybe stop going up altogether. What goes around comes around. So why not just stay in your chair forever? Chair is safe.
Chair won't hurt you.
When God closes a door, he opens up a window,
and the rain and hail fill the room, and the door God shut is firmly locked.
So just take a deep breath, because the water's now up to your neck.
Tomorrow is another day, but the circumstances remain the same. Or worse,
it's never too late to give up. Your dreams are worthless if you shoot for the stars. They'll shoot back. You will die if you get shot by a star. Rome wasn't built in a day. It took well over 1,000 years and countless resources and an endless workforce. And you can't even wash up a cup. Soup without
getting some downing.
Good things come to those who wait.
Except you, you're the exception that proves the rule.
God has a plan for you.
But unfortunately, that plan is for your life to be awful.
Slow and steady wins the race.
Unless
It's a race.
Once there were plenty more fish in the sea,
but now all the fish are dead and the sea is poison.
Ooh, that's your fault too.
It's never too late to give up. Lie down right now on the pavement, and maybe if you shut your eyes hard, the whole world will keep turning. And you can cry, you can laugh, but none of it really matters. It's never too late to give it all up and just stop. Give it all up and just stop. Give it all up and just stop. It's never too late to give up. Just like last time and the time before that, nothing is worth this much pain. There is no such thing as not turning back. Ba-da-ba, ba-da-ba. Burn your passport and buy a rifle. Ba-da-ba, ba-da-ba. Just try to make it home before night. Try to make it home before night. Try to make it home before nightfall.
Yeah,
amazing.
That's Johnny and the Baptist. That is Paddy Jervers and Johnny Donahoe. Thanks, guys. Thank you so much.
Thanks for
joining us. Bye, guys.
Bye.
Goodbye, adios, farewell. You'll be glad to hear that we think that your interview went well. But we have other things to get on with now, so you're gonna have to go. I'm sure our paths will cross again, but whoever really knows? It's been fun, it's been musical, it's been comical at times. But now we have to leave you, so goodbye. Goodbye!
Well, I have to admit, I went a little bit fan crazy with Johnny and the Baptist. I did genuinely listen to their full back catalogue whilst I was digging a hole in the back garden.
You were in a hole.
I was in a hole. But they're such wonderful guests, and we're so, so grateful that we got them on.
And that brings us to the end of our first episode of Series 3. How exciting.
So exciting.
And it was a bit of a religious episode. If you are a Christian or you took any offence to anything that we've said in this episode, forgive us. If you'd like to see more or hear more from Johnny the Baptist, why not visit them at their website, johnnythebaptist.co.uk, for live information, buy some merch, maybe go to Bandcamp and buy their album.
You can also find them on Twitter, @Johnny_Baptist.
And if you'd like to help our podcast out, why not visit us at Patreon, patreon.com/songsinthekeyoflaugh.
Or, of course, you can go and find us at ko-fi.com/songsinthekeyoflaugh.
Yeah, we need the cash.
We
so
do.
Cough it up.
See you next week.
Bye.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.